Blog Talk Radio.
Opportunity to give a cheap commercial for Kennedy's Custom Cycles. What I mean that is I want everybody to take the time and check your tire pressure. I'm going to ask you to take your seat off and how old your battery. Your battery's 2 years old. Just replace the battery. Now, if you don't know how to check your clutch cable, unless you're a suicide, find somebody that can show you how to do that. Look at your throttle cable. Getting back to tires for a second, don't just check the sidewalls. Check the tread padding. Inside the tread padding, we can also get this cracking and all that.
Uh-huh.
I have got so many people. Six bikes came in since yesterday. Six motorcycles, and they're all freaking out because they're saying things like, you know, I'm getting ready for, all the guys just came back from Arizona. We also got Yuma coming up. You and I got more separate runs coming up there. We are fixing mistakes or problems that you could have taken care of this at home.
Mm-hmm.
Now, for all the women riders out there, I am not excluding you. If it's your motorcycle and you know how to ride it, you should know how to check it. No matter where you listen to me from, no matter what state this is, or in Europe or anywhere at all, if you cannot understand how to do this, you need to contact your local dealership and see if they give basic classes. I am not proposing that everybody be an authorized mechanic. I mean, it's a great job if you can get it. But you still have to check your own vehicle. You cannot just run into a motorcycle shop and go, okay, put a few pounds of air in my tire. We will do that for you. Every shop will do that for you. But think what a better rider you'd be. Think how much more respect you'd have. Think how much more you'd respect yourself if before you went out for a ride, you would do a pre-flight inspection. When you come home, do a post-flight inspection. If you're going to go out and you get a chance to catch something wrong, it's better than having a breakdown on the road. And when you come back home, that's why you got to do the post-flight. You got to check it out while the bike is hot. Find out what's sizzling, what's cracking, what's making noises in here. Every single day, I see things that we could have corrected, you could have corrected. And I don't like the fact that so many women are saying, well, my old man does this. Your old man may not be with you all the time.
Nope.
And I'm not trying to be depressing, and I'm not trying to put women down, because there's guys that don't pay attention either. But I'm encouraging everybody, men and women, if you don't have the basic skills to maintain your motorcycle, not to fix it, to maintain it, go to your local motorcycle shop. Find out if they teach some basic classes. Screwdriver, you're real anal about all your stuff on your motorcycle. You check things out and check things out.
Mm-hmm.
Not everybody has to commit at your level. Not everybody has to commit at my mechanics level.
No, and actually going 90 to 100 miles an hour, I want to make sure that that fucker is not going to go anywhere.
Exactly. Yesterday, on my rear pipe, one of my mounting brackets for my muffler, it came loose. Didn't fall off and all that, but I picked a little tiny vibration up. I got to the shop, sat down, let it get really cold, and I went over, and the screw was loose.
Yep.
Now, what I'm driving right now is an 08. I have no idea why. and I changed pipes over 6 months ago, but one of the nuts actually backed off. It could have been more serious than all that, but I take the time to check it. Listen to your ears. You have a certain sound all the time. If it's a different sound, find out why. And the biggest mistake I really have to really stress is, again, is those people that come into my shop and their tires are under pressure.
Right.
First of all, it wears your tires out. Gives you a bad ride. It's unsafe. I can go on and on and on, but surely you must get the picture by now. Having a motorcycle is great. It's freedom of the road and all that, but we don't take enough time. And I'm not trying to be a pain in the ass tonight, guys. I just got to tell you that it's on my mind. We're not doing enough checking the motorcycles. By the time you get the bike to our shop, usually something caused something to break.
And if they come to the shop, there's no charge to help them check it out, is there?
This is not just a cheap promotion for Kennedy's Custom Cycles, currently located in Oceanside, California. It's not a commercial for our shop. The point is the fact that no matter where you are, you have to check your vehicle. I had a guy come in the other day, his sissy bar, one of the bolts was loose, and it was rattling around a little bit. And I said to him, well, what do you think the noise is? I don't know, Bill, I don't know. We went out, and I could hear it from him. I wasn't even close to it. I said, it's your sissy bar. We went over, tightening it up, and he was okay. He had his slightly bigger than average wife on the back. If that thing had gone out of whack, she could have fallen off the back or something like that. That's crazy. Now, whether or not your wife is bigger than slightly average, it doesn't matter. The point is that this man didn't even care enough about his wife to check his sissy bar. Now, anybody that has a motorcycle at all knows putting a sissy bar on isn't too difficult. If you have a regular one, solid bolted, if you have a quick release one, it doesn't matter. But you really have to check. If you have a quick release one, those rubber grommets, they wear out. Replace them or you get slack. Get more noise, too. Usually this isn't the way we go, but I just feel compelled this past day because so many bikes are coming in here. Now, some of them are, you can't fix it all, like one guy's radio's out. Okay, that's something you can't touch. But a lot of stuff is, in the picture, you see a picture of myself and screwdriver sitting up front. If your tire tread is the same as my forehead, bald, guess what you should do? Guess what you should have done?
Change the tire.
Yes, thank you very much. And now I know money's tight, and I know things aren't going good, but I'm going to ask you, don't break my balls over the fact I keep telling you, in my opinion, I need to replace your inner tube. I had an argument with a guy today. I'm 63. This boy's 7 years old. His inner tube was 2 years old, and he was fighting with me. Well, I think it'd go a little further. Well, it's not going to go further out of my shop. The inner tube was 2 years old and it was warm. I'm not asking you to buy Python seats. I'm not asking you to buy super traps. But I am asking you, when your mechanic suggests something in it to make the bike smoother or more safety, just go with the program. I think the inner tube was $11. You've got to give a little bit. That's called smart money to save your life. Again, if you don't have any shop in your area that has any type of basic safety training, go to your authorized dealership. Tell them, can they set a class up so people can go on a Saturday. The dealership will love it. It's great PR for them. It's solid, positive PR. Again, you don't need a class how to fix the bike, but you have to learn how to take care of yourself.
It ain't even that, Bill. It's like, remember when you fixed my bike, and the insurance guy didn't want to buy the brake cable?
Yeah.
Buy the brake, you know. Because it had a nick in it. So I said, all right, give me a release. He said, a release? I said, yeah, if you're not going to pay for the part, give me a release. So if something happens, you're on the hook. What do you do, Bill?
You replace everything.
Send a check.
That's a good point there to talk about insurance companies just a second, too. They have to get away cheap as possible. You have to second-guess them. You have to go over with your mechanic and say, is this okay, this okay? Is there anything the insurance adjuster forgot? And let's not say all insurance adjusters are bad. Let's just say the adjuster you had forgot something. Easy to do. He does a lot of bikes and all that. You need to have a good rapport with your dealership, with your mechanic. And let me backtrack that just a little bit. If you have a motorcycle going to a dealership and you have a very good experience with the mechanic, request that mechanic every time.
Yep.
Try to find the history of your motorcycle. Have that motorcycle, so when it goes into that mechanic you've had, he knows your history of your motorcycle. It is nothing more aggravating or time wasted than trying to find reports on what this motorcycle has been done in the past. Find one mechanic, stay with it. For you women, you must have the balls of your feet and the heels of the feet on the ground. You cannot ride around with just the balls of your feet. You can't do it. If you come to sand, transmission fluid, brake fluid, you will slip. Either get the motorcycle lowered, shorty shocks, take the seat down to upholstery shop, cut it out. Whatever it is you have to do, I beseech you, you must be able to put your feet flat in the ground. It is absolutely dangerous to see. And now I'm going to pick on the girls that wear spike heels too. Stilettos. Leave them in the saddlebag. Get where you're going, then put them on. Stop riding around. They're not safe either. I know I'm sound like an old fuddy-duddy. I'm trying to tell you what I see wrong.
Did you see that lady last Saturday hit that, you know, the sewer lid and she hit it?
Yeah. Yeah. Let me tell you something. You get your toes caught or your boot caught on those little sewer lids, that'll bend your foot backwards. And I've seen the bones across the toe just snapped, cracked in two. My brother Pat was leaving. We were in Arizona once, and we were pulling out of a driveway, and it was broken asphalt. And he put his foot down, did a break in the traffic. We took off, except the lip of his boot caught in that asphalt, snapped every bone across the top of his foot.
Mm-hmm.
Shit happens. So anyway, if anybody's out there listening to me and they think this is a good idea, I assure you, go to your dealership, Yamaha, Kawasaki, Suzuki, Harley. Ask them, is there a class? Can they set a class up? Set a class up for all women if you think you'd be uncomfortable. But I assure you, I think a co-ed class is just fine. But some women just say, I would rather be all women. That's fine. You can do a class, but you have to know. I bet you there's not 10 people out here listening, men or women, that know exactly what type of air is in their tires right now.
Nope.
And I bet you there's a big percentage that doesn't have any idea how low their oil is. No, of course they don't. And what we're trying to do for you is, I'm not trying to get business from our shop. I'm trying to tell you, wherever you are, you have responsibility. Now, I am spoiled because when my bike goes out, wherever it goes out, I have all the mechanics waiting. Check Bill's tire perfectly, da-da-da-da-da-da. All right, that sounds like I'm spoiled. I am spoiled. I started the motorcycle shop. Mechanics come to work for me. They bring their resumes. I said, I don't want to see a resume. I want to look in your eyes. I'm going to ask you one question, and your job depends on this. Can you fix anything I can break? And if they say yes, those guys are hard, and I've got very, very good mechanics. So if your dealership will not start a program, then find a woman's club or a veterans club or something and have them arrange some type of program. This could be like just 1 hour. I'm not talking about, you know, 7 days a week. 1 hour, go over your motorcycle. When we ride out of the shop, and this is the way, screwed up, tell you, a lot of people don't like me. If your bike is not safe, I'm going to pull you out of line.
Mm-hmm.
You can ride with us. You can ride last. You can be the very, very, very last one to go, and we'll tell you where we end up at. You will not ride in the middle of our group or the front of our group if you leak at all, bald tire, or even if I don't think you have the confidence or the, I don't want to say courage. It's not courage. It's confidence. Experience is the word I'm looking for. If you don't have the experience to ride, I'll put you in the back. But if your bike is not safe, first of all, I'd like to ask you right now, don't show up.
Mm-hmm.
Do not do something where your vehicle is going to go down and take out Screwdriver or myself or anybody in my family. Again, this doesn't sound like Bill Kennedy tonight because I'm picking everybody. I am picking it. I think we're getting too lackadaisical. Too many of the yuppies don't even know where the damn dipstick is.
Mm-hmm.
I can't tell you how many guys say, well, I can't get to my rear tire. I can't get to the valve stem. Oh, why can't you? Well, it's hard. It's hard.
Mm-hmm.
And And I would like to also really encourage the any women's organization. If you can't do it through your dealership, you find some mechanic that'll come out and talk to you ladies. There is nothing more satisfying than a woman's group pulling in from a long run, say going to Vegas or something, or like Arizona Bike Week, and their bikes are all running fine. Anybody can have a breakdown, but if it's a stupid breakdown, it just makes you women look weaker because you haven't taken the time to understand your own motorcycle.
Mm-hmm.
When I'm at the shop, I ask the women, nice motorcycle. Yeah, it's a new one. You got the title with you? Registration? Well, I got the registration. Where are your numbers on your bike?
Huh?
I don't know, Bill. Have you looked at the numbers on the pink slip and matched them up with the numbers on your frame and your motor? No, no. It's not necessarily a stolen motorcycle. However, the DMV...
to make a mistake.
They can transpose a number.
Which means they impound your bike. Exactly. At $30 a day.
And
for 30 days.
That's right. And hook up and all that in August with it too. Yeah. So, if you're listening to me and you think this is a good idea, take this upon yourself. If you're a little cocky and you say, well, you know what, I know all this stuff myself. Well, then ask some of your friends if they know. Maybe you could take the
share case. Share the knowledge.
Yeah. We do some long rides, and sometimes it's just little simple things. It's up to you guys what you want. What do you think? I depressed everybody so far tonight?
No, you're on a roll.
All right, then, yeah. Let me take a drink here and I jump in.
Well, I just I looked at some stuff here about motorcycle cause more harm than good to motorcyclists. Safety myths. There are misunderstandings circulating around everywhere, Bill, for the best ways for motorcycle riders to avoid being involved in accidents with other cars. In some cases, the myths about motorcycle accidents can do more harm than good and put motorcyclists' lives at risk. Did you know, Bill, that motorcycle riders are 8 more times more likely than those in a passenger vehicle to be seriously injured in an accident and 35 times more likely to die in an accident? With these statistics in mind, it is important for motorcyclists to know the best ways to protect their safety and what legal options they have when someone else harms them. Of course, this is by a lawyer, Bill. So
that's why loud pipes save lives. That's my theory.
You didn't want.
I want you to hear my bike.
The problems of not seeing motorcycle riders, despite public perception, the most common cause of motorcycle accidents is not motorcycle riders, but the other drivers. 2/3 of all collisions between motorcyclists and passenger vehicles are caused by the passenger cager.
Mm-hmm.
These accidents usually happen when the passenger vehicle fails to yield the right of way to motorcyclists. Or the driver doesn't see the motorcycle that hits him or her, which lately, Bill, it's people waiting to make a left turn.
Yeah.
Boom. One of the ways that some motorcycles try to compensate for drivers who cannot see them is to make sure they can hear them. There you go.
That's it.
The myth is that the louder the bike, the safer the rider will be because cars will hear it coming. No problem. However, it's the noise that is carried to the rear of the motorcycle so that the vehicles in front of the rider and those that are most likely not to see the rider and cause the accident will not benefit from a loud bike.
Well, I have to disagree with that because of the fact that when I'm splitting traffic, my noise reverberating off the cars alongside me, so that is carrying it forward. If I was an open road with no traffic, the sound would be carried back with the wind. But when I'm in between vehicles splitting the traffic like that, that noise is reverberating. So
right.
I disagree with that part there. I understand the basic concept.
The other common safety myths are that can hurt motorcyclists.
Mm-hmm.
Motorcyclists who know that they are doing won't get hurt. There is no amount of training or experience that can prevent all accidents from occurring. Motorcyclists cannot and will never be able to control the actions of other drivers, no matter how defensively or cautiously they operate their bike. One or two drinks will be okay, even if one drink is too many before riding a motorcycle. In New York, in 2007, 26% of the motorcycle riders involved in fatal accidents had a blood alcohol content over the legal limit, and another 30% had a BAC over 1%, or the equivalent of one drink. Adding the stiff penalties New York imposes on drunk drivers, and it really isn't worth the risk of having a drink before riding. Because
mm-hmm.
out here in California, Bill,
expensive.
It's going to be like $35,000 by the time
yeah.
you get done. for that $3 or $4 beer or that $6 cocktail.
You know, I want to say something about this. I don't like sharing my own personal experiences, but I do want to share this. 20-some years ago, we were bearing a club brother, and in the old days, we used to lower the casket ourselves. We put the dirt in, and we'd be passing around a joint and Jack Daniels, whatever you choose. Churches were all over, and we were all starting to fire up our rigid frame kickstart motorcycles. One of the guys up front was worse off than all of us, I guess, because one of the presidents, he crashed. Six of us got wiped out in the cemetery. And I got to think to myself, man, we're doing this to ourselves. And I got to think of how many people I've seen in the cemeteries. How many people have we lost due to drugs and or alcohol? And I'm blaming both. So anybody listening to me today is finding out why I don't take drugs or alcohol. I don't have a spiritual, you know, epiphany from God or anything. But laying there in the cemetery, I realized that it doesn't matter if you have one drinks and your buddy's got six drinks. If one of you has a wreck, you're all going to have a wreck. That's the way we have to deal with that. Now, I go to bars three times a week, as you know, Screwdriver. My program is the fact that I walk in the bar, people like to buy me a drink. That's fine. As long as it's a soft drink, I'm fine with that. It took a long time for my drinking friends to become comfortable with that.
Mm-hmm.
However, I still think back in time when six of us were all laid out in the cemetery. And I think I'm the only one that quit drinking. I think to this day, I'm the only one still alive. Well, it's been good luck on my part, but that's something I usually don't share with. That was a true story in the cemetery.
Well, that's like that. That's like that time you got hit by the on the freeway by that, what was it, Mexican guy? No insurance or nothing?
Yeah. I have never been hit by anybody in California with insurance. So if anybody in California's got insurance, you can come hit me. A few years ago, a lady in a Bentley came all the way into my lane, and with all of my limited skills, I avoided hitting her. And I got thinking, God, she probably had insurance.
Yeah.
Not my luck.
In a Bentley?
Bentley.
Yeah, maybe.
But no. I just got to find the guy, you know, just bought a car, hadn't got insurance on it, goes down the road, makes a mistake. I've been hit in the front, in the rear, both sides. What strange luck do I have that whenever I get hit, I've just got to fix the bike myself?
Oh, that's like...
Thank God for the uninsured motorist, which came back so many years ago. I got that loaded up on my bike.
That's like when that guy hit me?
Yeah.
If I didn't know how to ride, I wouldn't be sitting here next to you.
You certainly have to understand the fact that you are going to crash.
Exactly.
And in my case, I have motocross, desert, hill climbing, and drag racing experience. Falling down
That was on the street, right?
No, that wasn't everywhere. I have always said that the only thing you can do is relax, make the best choice, and go with it.
Yep.
But I assure you, screaming doesn't help at all. This is not going to work.
Or just flipping them off.
Oh, yeah.
That doesn't work either.
I would jump a curb and go through somebody's wooden fence if I thought it saved my life. These are choices you have to make, and you don't have a lot of time to make choices. But if you don't keep your options open, you're just going to drive right into something.
Yep.
And then, you know, it's too late.
Because it is, Bill. Whatever you look at, that's where you're going.
Exactly. We learned that in motocross driving. Desert training, excuse me. If you see the block or the rock, look at your peripheral vision. Do not look at it, or you just drive your bike right into it. Well, now, we split traffic. I look one car ahead.
I look three cars ahead.
Three cars ahead, okay. I never look at the car that I'm coming up to. Well, in your case, the way I said that, it'd be two cars ahead then.
Right.
I never look at the car I'm coming up to. I look at the car ahead of that.
Right.
And that's where I focus on with that. With peripheral vision, I'm looking to see how close are the western swing mirrors going to hit me. But other than that, I'm looking at the car above the car I'm coming up to. That keeps me centered, I think.
Yeah. I was just explaining to Bill, we just got a flyer.
Excuse me, we're both getting a little cold here.
Yeah, we just got a flyer in from Big Charlie Davidson.
Is that from our special friend, Jesse Gunn?
Yeah.
All
right. And what we're going to do here is she's supposed to call.
Well, we're talking. Screwdriver's got the board. He's moving things around, numbers and all that. So excuse us sometimes if we stop for a second. Screwdriver's trying to make some adjustment. And if we're bringing a caller in, we are trying to get them in quickly because I know you guys are tired of hearing my voice. Not that Screwdriver's any better either. Remember,
all that love.
This program is about dialogue. You need to share with us what's going on in your state today.
Yeah.
So we'll know what's going on in our state.
Because what happens on the East Coast happens on the West Coast. What happens on the West Coast is going to happen on the East Coast. Speaking of the West Coast, Bill, you know we're going to have up in Hemet, California, we're going to have another...
That's the Sheriff's Department, right?
Yeah.
No, that's always bad. What's going on up there now?
Well, what they're going to do is they're going to have a motorcycle... Actually, it's going to be a crackdown is what they call it, though. It begins Friday.
Is that like the Escondido where they stop the cars? Or
yes.
What is this?
Tell me, I didn't read this story. The motorcycle crackdown begins Friday in Hemet. The number of officers on patrol will be increased in the areas where motorcycles are most common, according to the sheriff's deputies.
By the way, from San Diego, from the border of Mexico, Hemet's about 80 miles north, just to give you an idea. Not that it matters much, just to add to the story, though. So what are they going after? What safety element are they trying to save us from? What have we done?
Here's the deal. Here's what they're going to use for their probable cause.
Right.
They're going to look out for riders who appear to be under the influence of drugs, alcohol, and riders breaking traffic laws will be ticketed. In the past 3 years, Hemet has logged 58 wrecks involving motorcycles, leaving 51 of the riders injured. Okay? 58 wrecks. What kind of wrecks?
Yeah. And what about damage to the elbows and the knees? What about damage to the toes? You know, we got to say something, though, for people who don't know. Hemet is a bit rural.
Right.
So they have a lot of open highways, and they don't have, yeah.
But, you know, and they're trying to say, it's not a officer's traffic safety grant.
Oh, we know. Come on. Nobody pays that anymore.
But they don't have any money, Bill. You know, Obama's going to shut the country down.
And
not pay the guys on active duty in different parts of the world right now doing stuff for our freedom. They're going to shut the government down, so that means nobody gets paid.
No.
But the mail will go through?
Mm-hmm.
What was the other one?
I thought they were going to shut the mail down to 4 days a week. Was there some talk about that? Because 5 days a week is too much, too expensive?
Right.
I know that was something. Well, you know, actually, in 1971, I was in the military, and I told a story to you. They didn't pay me.
Mm-hmm.
And when I said, well, I'll get a place in town, and how long will I be not paid for? They said, listen, whether we pay you or not, you're in the military. You'll work whether you get paid or not. It took them 3 months to straighten out my payroll. They had me down as dead. And even though I was dead, they still expect me to show up for roll call and go to work every day. My theory was, if you're dead, you get to at least go home and rest for a while, but no.
Didn't work out
for you. So our military guys
didn't work out for you, huh?
No, they're going to have to work without pay.
Yeah.
And they're not going to go on strike.
No.
Did
you know that Big Dog Motorcycles, their road trip's over, Bill?
Well, what happened to those guys?
They're going out of business.
You know, I'm going to say this right now. I like Big Dog Motorcycles. I like Big Bear Choppers. I don't like a lot of the aftermarket kit bikes because they're just cookie-cutter bikes. I like Big Dog, and I really like Big Bear. I like Big Bear
bank,
a little better, actually.
The bank took over the company, and they stopped production. Now what they do is they hope to create a new business that makes and sells parts to the Big Dog owners and dealers. In the meantime, the shutdown leaves those eligible current and future Big Dog owners without a warranty on their motorcycle. All Big Dog motorcycles came with a 2-year warranty. Although the events gave an ordinary week a dramatic start, the ending isn't a surprise to many industry experts. And then they admitted that shutting down wasn't completely unexpected. the road similar to the motorcycle manufacturers have taken in the final days of American Iron Horse played out over the weeks in speculation in 2009 until management admitted the company's motorcycle inventory stock and tools will be liquidated. So they, Big Dog, you remember when they went to the Muscle Line Choppers?
Mm-hmm. Well, that long ago, that Indian, one of its many times up there at Gilroy, they did the same thing. They sold everything out. I was going to go up and see about purchasing a few of them, but to be honest with you, the aftermarket Indians, they weren't real Indians, so I didn't give a damn. I didn't pick up anything. Badmouth an Indian for a second than I am. The new Indians that are out, the ones that come from the Kiwi people, is it Australia? New Zealand, rather. Which one it is? New Zealand, I think it is. They're making a pretty good product. The Power Plus Indian was a disaster for... I wouldn't work on them except for my friends would bug me.
And finally he got rid of it.
Yeah, thank God. This is America. Everybody's going under.
Hello, caller. Hello.
You're on the air with the Phil and Bill.
Hello. You talking to me?
I'm talking to you.
We're talking to you.
I've been waiting for you my whole life.
I don't know if you were talking to me or not. This is George Simmons. How are you?
We know, George. We know your voice, brother. Good to hear you tonight. Listen, you're helping an event coming up here this Saturday. You want to tell us a little bit about it, please?
Well, Saturday is a welcome back. There's a ride going on a poker run. It's not really ours. The one that we're doing is the one we're going to be involved in heavily is at your place on Sunday. We're going to be there trying to explain to the local riders and local American Legion post members how they can participate with the American Legion riders, which is one of the fastest growing rider groups in the country.
Now, George, I have to stop you there. I know the difference clearly, but if somebody's interested in the American Legion riders, what is the criteria, sir? How can somebody just join up? Can anybody join up?
They can join up as long as they meet the criteria to be an American Legion member. They have to become the American Legion member first. And that criteria is fairly straightforward. Almost anybody that's served since the Second World War qualifies. There are only a few periods in there that do not qualify. I can't give you all of them on the air. It'd take too long. But it's almost anyone qualifies. If your dad or mom served, you could qualify in either the auxiliary or Sons of the American Legion. And once you do that, you can qualify to be an American Legion rider. And it's a pretty simple deal. And once you become an American Legion member, $25 a year, if you're qualified and accepted by the chapter, you're a new member.
Now, George, I have a lot of respect for the American Legion riders.
Bill, I have to interrupt you.
Hang a sec, please. George,
if you check your roster, I am a member. You guys have been bugging me for a while now.
You are a member?
Yeah, I'm a member of 146.
Oh, okay. Are you a member of Riders, Chapter 146?
No, but I've been heavily recruited.
Well,
there's not much of a writer. He's more of a, he goes to the bar and just sits there and says, God bless America all night long. You've seen those guys.
Yeah,
all right, now, George, let me ask you. Okay, American Legion, and I know this here, but you said something about the Patriot Guards. And I got to ask you, can you tell us a little about that? Because it's kind of like a mysterious organization in a bit, please. You got the floor.
Well,
go ahead, buddy.
I don't know that it's mysterious. If you're a qualified member as a vet, and you want to join the Patriot Guard rider, all you have to do is go online to the site on Google and sign up. They have no dues. They keep us informed of the rides. Patriot Guard riders here, the one where we ride with, Oceanside, Riverside, and San Diego County, probably most of their riders are American Legion riders too. So, in our particular chapter, about half of us are PGR members. And one of the things that PGR does, which I think is absolutely unbelievably exceptional, is we go out and we welcome home the troops coming back from Afghanistan. When a battalion comes back, or any groups, we go out and meet them and welcome them on the base. For example, about a week ago, we welcomed a battalion back, and we had about 35 motorcycles in a parade leading two buses of servicemen. And we had a Marine policeman in front of us with a police car with the siren on and the lights. And we escorted them through the base, actually escorted them all the way from Riverside to here, and through the base to their families who were waiting at the base. It was probably one of the most moving experiences of my life to watch these young Marines come back and have a big parade welcoming them. You know,
did anybody welcome you when you came home?
I came home in 1966 from Vietnam.
Did anybody welcome you when you came home, I asked you, sir?
Well, yeah, they did. They called me names and spit on me. You know, it was one of those kind of deals.
The veterans are the most patriotic of us all. Even though we were not loved coming home, every veteran will stand up first. Every veteran puts his hand over his heart right away. George,
well,
if you listen to this in other states, I don't want you to believe anything, but how can they reach the how can they reach the paralyzed? I mean, especially the American Legion rise in their own state. Is there some line or some Google or some WW kiss my ass or something? How can they reach the American Legion in their states?
Just go online, AmericanLegion.com.
That's what I wanted, sir.
Yeah, and we also have a website, AmericanLegionWriters.com.
That's what I wanted also, yes.
And I'll also give you I can also give you my phone number.
Do we want to
My phone number is 760.
Hang on.
Go ahead.
310-6461. And if they call me, I'll inform them of all pending rides, pending meetings. We meet every fourth Saturday of the month at 10 a.m. at the Pit Stop Restaurant in Oceanside.
You aren't the guy I ran down at the red light, are you?
No.
Okay.
If you ran me down, I would have chased you home.
not literally run you down. I mean, when you guys, I caught the light when you guys left the restaurant.
Ah.
And then I caught the next light, but I went through that light when you guys, half the guys made the left and the other half caught it. I was in the back. I was with the last guy in the back. And
well,
then,
you were that guy, huh?
And it went black, yeah, in the black diner, yeah. That was me.
Well, I can tell you this. I've been riding for about 55 years. One of the most moving and enjoyable experiences I've had in my life has been to be associated with the American Legion Riders and the Patriot Guard. When you go to do one of these things, we do welcome home things. We do memorial runs. We go to Riverside National Cemetery to do the memorial runs. And we've done them at Cabrillo. So we do them probably three or four times a month whenever you're available. And you get to go out and ride with a bunch of seasoned riders. I would venture to say that most of our riders in the our particular chapter have been riding 30 years or more. I think Bill knows a lot of them. So, you know,
George,
what's
the impact you're having on
the
young vets? Any of those guys join your organization, the active vets?
We just recruited a 22-year-old Marine from the base. As you know, Pendleton is right here, one of the largest Marine bases in the United States. We just recruited a 22-year-old Marine. Last week, we recruited a retiring Marine full colonel and his son, who's now active. So, yes, we are out on the base, and we are pursuing the active duty Marines, and we'd like to get them, you know, involved. A lot of people don't understand. You don't have to have a Harley. Anyone who has a street or a highway legal motorcycle is more than welcome.
George, chance you're trying to recruit women? Any women coming in recently? Any women stepping up and saying, I want to be a part of the organization?
And my wife was the first woman recruit for the American Legion Riders Oceanside. We just recently recruited two more. We recruited one who is an active duty chief, and quite a lady. In fact, last week we were over at the Welcome Home Vietnam Vet deal over in Vista at 435, and she sang the Star-Spangled Banner, and I mean sang it as good as anyone I've ever heard.
I had a chance to meet her. Also, she's a lady.
She's
a lot of class.
She is definitely a lady. But has a beautiful motorcycle too.
Did Bill introduce me to you Saturday?
Who?
Did Bill introduce me to you Saturday?
I don't think he did.
Oh, okay. He introduced me to a couple of guys. I'm just trying to place the voice with the face.
Yeah. But I'll be over at Bill's on Sunday.
Well, you'll
so
be at Katie Scutzman's. George, don't forget, I have a brother, a partner. Everybody always gives me top billing, but I have my brother Mike Kennedy down there. So not Bill's place, brother, please. Kennedy's place, if you would.
Kennedy's place. Well, you know, I didn't want to talk about your brother. He is a little better looking than you.
There you go.
Hey, don't get me started, because you know I happen to like your wife. Now, don't get me started on the air.
Yeah, you've been hanging around her a lot lately.
We're just fine together, sir. Don't worry about it. Those guys that sneak behind your back, you've got
to
watch out for. I'm not behind your back, George. I'm
behind
your face.
I have to be careful because Bill wouldn't sell me my new motorcycle until my wife said okay. So
all that love.
Yeah.
Glad I'm not the only one. I'm glad I'm not the only one that gets it from him.
Yeah,
George, what about the other riders in California? Do you guys get together intermittently or any contacts with the other Legion posts?
Well, we've got 7 guys going up to Lompoc this weekend to the District 22 meeting, which is our district for, you know, most of California from about Orange down, you know. The riders are pretty active throughout the entire state of California. And getting
George,
more
a lot of people
more...
don't understand that you're talking about San Diego, go up to Lompoc. A lot of people in different states or different countries may not understand that distance. Can you tell us about what's the mileage one way, give or take?
You know, I don't know because I didn't look at it, Bill, but it's up above L.A., so what is it, about 300 miles?
Okay-ish, yeah. It's like people listening out of states and different countries that kind of get an idea of what we're talking about.
Yeah.
We know.
Well, Bill, you have right now we have 6 people listening in New Zealand. 1 guy in Brazil, 1 guy in Germany,
yeah.
1 guy in Poland, 1 guy in Sweden.
It's a slow start.
Well, kind of give them an idea. California's 1,000 miles long.
Yeah, that's where we have to ride all the time.
You know,
yeah.
You ride from San Diego up to where I was born in Eureka.
Mm-hmm.
You'd better be, if you're going to make it in one day, you'd better be a real, real strong rider.
My goal is 500 miles a day I can make. But when I go to Sturgis, I have to knock it down to 400 miles a day. So at the end of the fourth day, I'm in Sturgis. When I do more than 500 miles a day, the second or third day, I'm getting a little dingy. So
well,
I've got to change my
age, you've got to take it a little easier, Bill.
I'm thinking every year I've got to cut that down. Once we were kings, though, but it's getting a little shorter.
Can remember when we used to make that Sturgis ride from San Francisco.
Yeah.
And we used to make it in 3 days.
Yeah.
But that was when we were much younger, you know, like in our 40s or 50s.
My first one was a 64 Panhead, stretched, 40 over Springer front end, no front brake, suicide. My seat was maybe a half inch thick, but you know what? I looked good going. That's all I cared about in those days.
Yeah, dark hair. And
that's when I had hair.
On the phone here, I clicked in Jesse from Biggs Harley Davidson.
Hey guys.
Well, hi Jesse.
This is George.
American Legion Riders.
I'm
you
glad
to
meet
you.
You. I'm really glad to meet you because I was going to call you to find out about the event you got coming up.
Well, I'm kind of glad I got to listen in on yours too. I love hanging out with all these eloquent old-school bikers. I'm learning so much.
Well, you're going to have a pretty good group from ALR 146.
Wait, 1 minute, okay? These two guys are older than me. I'm the youngest one in the group besides you here.
You're the one with no experience. We know that. Don't keep bragging about that. That's embarrassing you.
Oh, okay. Here you go.
Well, just to make Bill feel good, I'm a lot older than he is.
There you go. But if you stand
well,
next
to
me, you look younger. I've had a hard life.
Oh, whatever. Whatever. You guys.
Just, did you hear the beginning when I was talking about the maintenance on motorcycles?
I am so sorry.
Okay. I was talking just very quickly. There's something I'm going to request that you do. Put up a little school so that everybody goes to Biggs Harley-Davidson in San Marcos, California, which is San Diego. They can go out and get a little school on how to check their motorcycles, how to check their tire pressure, how to check their oil. I'm not suggesting that you put a school on to teach how to fix mechanics, but I think it's so important that each rider knows how to check their own motorcycle. And it's not just the women riders, it's the new riders. If you own a motorcycle, you need to understand it and to check it out. How does that sound, Jesse?
Well, it sounds really good. I'm so glad to hear you say that because we just did some outreach on Camp Pendleton, and actually there's a big ride coming up, I believe, on the 6th of May. Ooh, is that right? I will have to
jump
on
the 7th of May.
No, not our ride. It's a ride for active duty soldiers, and it's an all motorcycle ride. It's not Harley specific, but we're actually sending one of our folks out there to do exactly that, Bill, to do like the pre long ride check. You know,
well, outstanding. I didn't know about that.
Yeah, well, it actually just happened today, so it's you weren't out of the loop. It just happened. But we're really proud. We have a
So basically, Bill, you got scooped.
I did. Once again, Jesse just swooped right underneath me, you know. She knows everything.
Well, I got kind of finagly, you know, like girls can. and kind of what I feel like was a coup d'etat, I was able to scoop up some really good talent. He's one of the motorcycle safety instructors from Camp Pendleton. His name is Mike.
Harris.
And pardon?
Mike Harris. Mike Harris, I believe it is.
I don't think it is. I think it's like it's not Bancroft. I always say his last name wrong. He's a young soldier, a young Marine just back from Iraq and, you know, suffered some pretty severe injuries. So it sort of ended his military career, but he served our country really, really well. And now he's an employee over at Biggs. He's just doing a smoking good job in our parts department, but he's also a riding instructor. And, you know, of course that encompasses all that kind of basic maintenance that every rider should do every time they get on their wheels, you know, every single
yes,
time
course.
For a long run.
About the pre-flight and the post-flight inspection. Before we go out, we check our motorcycles. We come back in when your mind is still fresh, you check your motorcycle. You don't check it the next day.
That's Georgia.
Yep.
George, you guys do any type of things like that with the American Legion riders?
What we are doing mainly with American Legion riders right now is safety course instruction,
yay,
which will be starting this next Saturday, which is a pack riding safety course to get them up to speed on how to ride in the pack. What we find is that there are a lot of motorcycle riders out there with a lot of experience, but there are also a lot of experienced motorcycle riders who really don't understand their role when they're in the pack.
You mean that's like that guy in a black diner that flies by at about 90 chasing everybody down?
That guy.
Mean mugging the guy that won't get out of their lane? Yeah, I know who you're talking about.
Yeah,
I got out of their lane. I went around them.
And you mean mugged them on the way by. I know how you ride.
You know, Jesse, before you start talking about the event on the 7th, is it correct?
Correct.
One of the stops we talked about is Mount Soledad. And what I've done is, first of all, I invited the American Legion riders to attend and put a little table up and all that. And George said he'd be there to help. I've asked the American Legion riders to get up on stage when we all get back in and say a few words about the importance of what Mount Soledad is to us Americans and what it means to be freedom. What it is, the fact that we drive by that every day and don't even appreciate it. Many people know Mount Soledad, but they don't know why it's there. So, George, again, I'm going to put you on the spot now. Can I Can I ask one of you or one of your fellow American Legion riders on the 7th at Biggs Harley-Davidson in San Marcos to get up and spend a few minutes telling us the importance of Mount Soledad?
On the 7th of?
May.
Let me just get over to May here and see.
You're just going, why you put me on the spot? That's the type of guy I am, George.
I know you, Bill. I've known you for a long time.
Many, many, many.
Yeah. Okay, May the 7th. Let's see, do I have that down here? Oh, I'm glad you told me. What time does it start?
The ride will
go on. Jesse, we haven't wrapped the numbers down yet, but are we talking about 10 o'clock at your place?
10 o'clock launch at our place, yeah. Or
okay,
10 o'clock registration at our place, yeah.
Well, that looks pretty good. It's far enough out. I will agree to, if not me, someone will speak on the Mount Soledad Cross.
No. Yeah, at the dealership, not at the cross.
I'm talking about the cross at the dealership.
Yeah.
I was initially I was thinking about having somebody speak at the cross, but a lot of people won't make the full run, and I want everybody there to get the full message. I think it's that important.
I agree.
Well, you know, Bill, I think that with the amount of people that are getting involved with the American Legion, most people don't know it, but we're a fairly large organization. We have approximately 2.5 million members nationwide. Our American Legion rider group is growing. At the pace we're growing in Oceanside, we'll double in the next 12 months. We've been growing at about 4 to 6 a month. So we're
Be 4 to 7 this month.
Okay, you're on. We'll put you on. Fourth Saturday at 10 a.m., we'll look for you at the pit stop.
Okay.
Your American Legion Riders application in hand.
That'll be the 30th.
No, that will be
right?
The fourth Saturday, which is not the
30th. Oh, 23rd.
23rd. This is the month
23rd.
With 5 Saturdays in it.
Right. Okay.
Yeah,
I'll be done.
The fourth one is actually the 23rd, yes.
If you guys start talking in O-Dark 30, you're going to lose me.
Well, don't worry about it. We already lost Bill because he won't get up. He won't get forget about it.
I don't do moisture. Jesse, please, let's get back to you. Tell us about what's going to go on, please, here. And now we got a commitment from the American Legion riders to not only be there, put a booth up, and to give a small presentation on the importance of the Mount Soledad Cross. Tell us what's going on, Jesse. Well, give us the whole spiel. What's going on 3 weeks in a row you got going to your shop?
Okay, well, May 7th, it's the Biggs Bad Ride supporting Rip's Bad Ride. It's a smaller version, just local. It's the route that you helped me plan, of course, because you're my little rad guru. And we will be launching at 10 o'clock. Registration will open in 8:45 and close at 10. It's a poker run. Am I allowed to say that? It's a poker run. It starts at
Biggs. It's a poker run, not a poker run.
Yeah, let's clarify for your driver's sake. So it starts at Biggs. It goes over to Kennedy's and then down to Mount Soledad into San Marcos to hit the Back Alley Grill. Fabulous place. Love that guy. Good guy. And then back to Biggs where we'll have music. Really cool magician, thanks again, Bill, and the American Legion educating us on Mount Soledad, and it's $15 per rider, $20 if you have a passenger. Your ride ticket or your ride hand is your raffle ticket for the raffle prizes. We have some cool prizes from Rips, from the Rips organization, and Rips will be there. The American Legion will be there, and if anybody else is interested in attending and just getting word out about their organization, please let me know. You're welcome to come out and set up, and it'll be a really great ride. All the proceeds will be going to the American Diabetes Association under the RIPS, under the RIPS umbrella, and it's just sort of a warm-up ride for June 5th, of course, which is the RIPS Bad Ride, and we're a launch site for that. Thanks again to Bill. So that's really cool. And then on May 14th.
Jesse, one second, please. I'm sorry. Semantics, does it say the North County pre-bad ride? We'll use a certain words from the American Diabetes. Did we get that in there? North County's... Go ahead, please.
No, but I can fix that. It's just a Biggs bad ride. And I spoke to RIPS, and they allowed us to use their logo.
Okay, did you say RIPS bad ride or North County's
Biggs,
pre-bad ride? Pre-RIPS bad ride.
It says RIPS bad ride.
Okay.
It doesn't say RIPS pre-bad ride. If you'd like me to put that, because Joe and I are looking at it right now, I'm going to post it right now.
Yeah.
Don't post it. I'll fix it and send it back to you.
Okay. You want to put Biggs pre-ride, bad ride, or North County's pre...
This is why I send it to you guys, so you can do this, but let's not do this on air. I'll fix it and send it back.
We have 2 hours. We can do anything on the air. Now, let me get back to what I was going to talk about. Mount Soledad. Did you say that we're going to have another speaker out on Mount Soledad, which we're initially going to do, or do we change that because we're going to have the American Legion riders speak at Biggs at the beginning of it?
We're having...
The
Boy Scouts are going to do the color guard, and then at Biggs, and then I thought we would do the American Legion education on the meaning of Mount Soledad.
Because when they come back in.
Because people are getting, they're not all riding together, so they may not all be hitting Mount Soledad at the same time, and I want what's said about it to be absorbed and heard. So I thought we'd do it with a captive audience.
Exactly. That's what I want. I want Mount Soledad to be just a poker stop, and when everybody comes back in, I'd like to have one of the American Legion riders get up and just say a few words so people understand the importance of what that is.
Right.
And how, as Americans, we're not paying attention.
Yes.
We're not what?
We're not paying attention to Mount Soledad. We're just driving by it almost daily. We don't take our friends or neighbors up there, out-of-town guests or anything. Most people, when I do a survey, well, they heard of Mount Soledad. That's got that cross up. And I mentioned to him, it's a memorial. Well, I didn't know that. It's just something that we take for granted. Like living here in California, we take the Pacific Ocean for granted. We just drive by and don't even see it. But that Mount Soledad Memorial is something that we Americans should take the time to appreciate.
Well, you know, we Americans need to pay a little more attention to the freedoms we've enjoyed for the last 200 years, because those are in danger. You know, everything I see today concerns me that the reason that I am as active as I am in the American Legion and the Riders and the Patriot Guard is that I want to get the word out to the general public that, you know, it's about time for you to start taking some responsibility for maintaining that liberty, not leaving it all to the guys who you really don't understand what they're doing. You know,
George, if I can conversate something here, what I think the parents need to do is when they go to the football games, the baseball game, when they're with their children, they need to make their children be a bit more respectful during this time. I think the parents need to take the brunt of the ignorance that are going on and allow their children to get away with too much stuff without taking time to have them sit down and tell them what their fathers and grandfathers have done for this country and how, God forbid, that my grandchildren should go to war. God forbid this. If they do go, I want them to understand they're in a long line of great Americans that stood up for their country. Children at an early age should be taught this.
You said the secret, which is respect. The children nowadays, you know, and I have a 19-year-old, and I love her to death, but she has very little respect for adults, including her parents. I'm sure, I know she'll get over that because I also have a 42-year-old who's knows what's going on. But I think it's our responsibility as parents to imbue in our children respect not only for the adults, but respect for this great country that we live in.
Can I weigh in on that?
Sure.
Jump, please, Jesse.
Okay, well,
you got the floor, Jesse.
A couple of things. You know, I'm a 36-year-old mother of a 9-year-old who watches the news with me every night, and we discuss it, and we talk about it, and we talk about the Red Cross and life-saving measures that happen when there's a natural disaster, and we talk about what happens when we offer support to, you know, Libyans in their rebel freedom fighting right now. And we also discussed the history behind that. Now, I'm not going to get into politics because I'm very opinionated, and I'll go off. But the point is, my 9-year-old is learning a worldview and has been since she could talk. One of her first 20 words was propaganda. And that was, you know, just because she was around political conversation so much. But outside of politics, and no matter what I may feel about what quote-unquote elected official, though I could go off about her electoral college too, but anyway, no matter what I feel about any of that, my daughter has never, ever had the leeway, and that's what it is. It's the leeway to show that disrespect for soldiers, for, well, quite frankly, she's not allowed to show disrespect to the bagger at the grocery store because it's just not accepted. But she understands and appreciates service to the country. She has shown the comparison of the freedoms and the rights that we have in this country in comparison to other countries. She's not hidden from that, and she's not bubbled from that. If she can watch these cartoons like Batman or Pokemon or anything else that have all this sassafras in all the dialogue, and she's expected to absorb and comprehend that, I'm definitely going to do my job as a parent and counter it with reality, which is you show respect, period. When you are 18 years old and you are old enough to earn and develop your own respect, you may choose who you show it to based on the fact that they've earned it, and it belongs to them out of the efforts and the respect that they show others as well. I don't believe in blind respect, but I do believe that humanity and human kindness is paramount to human survival, period.
Perfect. I want to tell you that when my daughter was in high school, she learned how to read a bus schedule. She learned how to do a rental agreement. She learned how to do a checkbook. She learned how to do all these things. She said, "Dad, why are you doing this?" And I said, "I have no guarantee I'm going to be here."
Absolutely. But, you know, on that same note, while you're talking about kids have no respect, I'm sorry, and I'm, you know, I'm bashing myself in this and my mother's generation, who I'm not. My mom worked her butt off. She was in law enforcement her whole life. She was a single mom my whole life, and she did a good job. And we made butt heads, but we do it with respect. But what I will tell you is look at the baby boomers on down and don't say kids have no respect. Look at them and go, where are you fulfilling that contract, that unwritten contract of bringing a child into this world and teaching them? It's not a matter of survival. We are not dogs. It's not making sure that they just get fed and don't get killed. It's making sure that they know how to navigate this world as their best possible person. And, you know, TVs aren't babysitters. My daughter's homeschooled. I am hugely inconvenienced in my life, if you can put it like that, to ensure that my daughter is not stuck in a public education system that will fail her and on most counts, try to usurp the values that I would instill in her with their media-fed, commercialized delusions about what being a good person is. You know, it's not a once-a-year donation to some charity. It's getting your butt out there and packing boxes for the elderly with Angel Depot, which I want to talk to you guys about sometime. You know, I mean, it's that kind of thing. On Thanksgivings and Christmases, before we eat our dinner, we go help serve dinner. And you know what is really, really sad is half the people we're serving dinner to in a soup kitchen, we're serving dinner to after they served our country and our system failed them. And that's crap. My granddad served in 3 wars. I could not have more respect for veterans, but I have no respect for a society that has gotten so lax. They allow our veterans to eat their holiday meals in soup kitchens. 30-year-olds and 40-year-olds should be ashamed of themselves. Buck up, man up, and step up. It's absurd. It's absurd. Sorry. Ooh.
Jesse, George, Screwdriver wants to play something for you that he thinks is very appropriate, and I agree with 100%.
Okay.
So hang on one second. Can you cut in there?
Yeah, go ahead.
No, I went to Charlton Heston.
Yeah, but go ahead and talk to John.
Oh, John, I'm sorry. John Del Santo, how are we doing?
Very good, thank you. How's yourself?
We're doing fine. We got a couple of people on the phone here. We got George with the American Legion Riders. We got Jesse, who's going to come back again and talk to us. She's with Biggs Harley Davidson. She's the event coordinator, production person, and all that type of thing. Tell us, old great guru of information, what's going on in our political world?
Hold on.
Okay.
Please. Oh,
good.
Because
John,
I wanted to stay with
before
that.
You get started, we know you got important things to say. We want to hear that. But Jesse and John, we all been talking about America and pride and all that. And Screwdriver wants to play something short. We hope you'll be patient and I'll listen to it, and then we'll comment. And John, you hang in. I need to hear from you too, okay?
Gotcha.
Okay. This right here, since you talked about homeschool and schools and what's going on, Jesse, this was made by Charlton Heston.
You know, Moses.
Moses. And it was called, it's called
The
Porch with
Moses. I know who Charlton Heston is.
Well, I figured you would, but this is very important because I want you to listen to what he's going to say here. I'm going to put it on right now.
I mean, you consider your...
Hang on. There you go.
You believe in the Second Amendment to the Constitution, right?
Oh, come on.
I mean, consider yourself a keeper of the flame and you intend to pass that torch on to the next generation of Americans. So tell me, if you could see into the next century and know whether the Second Amendment is still intact or in shambles, would you look? If someone could predict the outcome a half a hundred years from now of all your conviction and commitment and hard work, would you listen? Well, you can.
What guarantees me freedom? Oh, that's a hard question. What is the Constitution? I don't know. Can
you see him?
I don't know.
Will they be the keepers of the flame?
No, I do not think everybody should have a right to own a gun.
What is the Constitution? I don't know.
Guns, in general, are very bad.
What is the Constitution? I don't know. What's the Constitution? I don't know.
Will they carry the torch?
I have no idea what the Second Amendment is.
An amendment is...
Oh, I know about the Second Amendment. Let me think. What is the Second Amendment? You got me there. I don't know.
What's the Second Amendment? I don't know.
I don't know.
Something's gone wrong. For all our vigilance and battle scars over the Bill of Rights, have we let the flame of freedom's torch grow cold? Because there can be no torch to pass where there's no flame. A well-regulated militia being necessary to the security of a free state, the right of the people to keep and bear arms shall not be infringed. The Second Amendment. Textbooks ignore it, schools teach against it, clergy preach against it, politicians legislate against it, media ridicule it, movies pervert it, courts avoid it, and too many gun owners permit it. So it's not unreasonable that with one lost generation, we could lose the Second Amendment forever. Because we didn't teach them what the battle's all about. We didn't strike that spark in their hearts that lights the fire for freedom. So why does that belief burn so brightly in you and me? Our core beliefs are the work of all the men and women of our childhoods. A constellation of people who orbited around us, tugging here, pushing there, day after day as we grew, shaping our beliefs, carving our characters until we became who we are. You remember them? Parents who didn't just talk about values, but who lived out those values. The gym coach whose knotted rope taught you to pull your own weight. The scoutmaster who surely had a job and a family to tend to, but always made time for you. Clergyman whose moral compass helped guide your way. The grocery store owner who played along with mom in an unscripted scolding that ended your candy pilfering days forever. The principal whose handmade paddle was somehow comforting. It meant punishment was certain. So was forgiveness. The neighborhood teenager who bragged about joining the army, but whose silence after the war taught you even more. The teacher who stood up for the weak and stared down the bully. The neighborhood policeman who didn't just know the law, he knew everything you were thinking. That stranger you watched at a football game who, during the national anthem, unknowingly guided your hand over your heart. And that woman by him, her eyes fixed in the flag, that taught you patriotism isn't just for guys. All those people, they gave you a sense of geography about your life, where you fit in, right and wrong. Each of us is a tapestry of threads woven by all of them. They understood their part in the pattern, personal responsibility, freedom, honesty, justice, the Bill of Rights. That is the living torch they passed to us. Imagine if every kid had learned what we learned, that without a Second Amendment, by what means could a free people expect to protect freedom? We learned that. History proves it. Common sense confirms it, and any school kid can grasp it. Only people who are free to own firearms can remain free people. If every kid could just learn that a gun is a thing to be handled with care and respect, yes, honor, because beneath all the trappings of hobby and camaraderie and sport, a firearm is the fundamental symbol of our freedom, because a firearm gives the most common of common men the most simple and supreme right to pursue life and liberty and happiness in accordance with and under the protection of the law. That's why the right of the people to keep and bear arms shall not be infringed. That is the passion we must ignite in those who follow. All of us who feel that surge of pride, who cheer with the genuine glory of a free people able to protect their own freedom. So what are we doing about it? Yes, we can blame violent crime or Sarah Brady or the media or bullet-riddled movies, and certainly some blame is due. But what effort has our generation spent to make sure the next generation feels as deeply as we do? If we focus on anti-gun legislation but ignore an anti-gun generation, if we spend years as pro-gun activists but only minutes as pro-gun mentors, if we've earned the support of this generation of office holders, but not the next generation of voters, we will have failed. We must tell it, teach it, live it, breathe it. Every one of us born beneath this blessed American sky has rights nobody can take away, because no one gave them to us. They were ours from the beginning. Each of us has a birth certificate, but it didn't give us life. It just put on paper what everybody already knows. We are alive. In the same way, the Constitution didn't give us rights. It just put on paper what everybody already knows. We are free to say and write and think and work and worship as we choose. We're free to own a firearm, and that right shall not be infringed. If you consider yourself a freedom-loving patriot, you can't shirk your duty to teach America's young to understand the Second Amendment, to revere it, to embrace it, to defend it, and in their turn, to bequeath it. That's what we have to do. We, the teachers, the neighbors, the clergy, the uncles, the grocers, the legislators, the scoutmasters, the parents, the Americans. Only then can we pass the torch with that sacred flame that lights the American way.
George, let me ask you, were you any comments on that, please? Don't ask Jesse, I'm going to ask you next. George, what do you feel about that?
Well, you know, I feel very strongly about that particular thing. You know, I'm concerned that there are all of us who believe in it, but are not doing anything about it. And I believe that now is time for us to get busy and start preserving that Second Amendment right, because without it, this country will not be around much longer. You know, I can't believe that people think that guns are dangerous, because they're not.
The guy
people
behind
have
the
handle
gun
the guns. What's that?
The one behind the gun is dangerous if they don't know what they're doing.
That's right. So let's.
Education is everything. Education is power. Jesse, let me ask you to respond to that. What did you feel of what Charlton said?
You know, I have quite frankly, I have mixed emotions about it. I do believe that we have to preserve our Constitution, but at the same time, I think we need to evolve. I think preservation and evolution are not, they don't cancel each other out. I think it all needs to happen at the same time. I believe in the Second Amendment. I also believe that criminals should lose their rights to bear arms.
Have you, you said your daughter was homeschooled?
Yes.
Okay, don't take this the wrong way, but what is, how much have you taught her about the Constitution?
Up one side and down the other.
Good for you.
For you?
Absolutely.
Okay.
I mean, again, I say, you know, I mean, you guys have to remember that from my perspective, from a mom's perspective, yes, absolutely, I want the right to bear arms and protect my own home. But somebody who has used that right and abused that right to victimize other people, no, absolutely, they should never have that right again.
Okay, so we don't get this through an all-night constitution because we all got some pros and cons. Let's switch back to tell me what's happened the second week in May with you, Jesse. What you got going on week two?
Hot Rods and Harleys. It's a car show and a bike show. There's five categories for bikes and five categories for cars, a $100 prize for each category, and a $500 People's Choice People's Choice Best in Show for car, People's Choice Best in Show for bike is a $500 prize. Vendors, bands, stunt bike show, and then May 21st is the 9th annual May Ride. So,
tell us about the May Ride.
The May Ride benefits Homefront San Diego. Clint August from 105.3 puts it on every year. The Hooters girls come out. They also do a stunt bike show. They do a huge ride beforehand. All the funds raised go straight to Homefront San Diego, which is a no administrative fee nonprofit organization that supports the families that are here waiting for their loved ones who are serving our country overseas to come home. So, like, a wife could literally call up and be, instead of bothering her husband who's serving and, you know, having to deal with everything that he deals with over there, instead of him worrying about his family, she can literally call up Homefront San Diego and say, you know, money's tight, the car's broke down, I don't know how to fix it, I'm here with the kids, I don't know what to do, and among their network will either get fixed or with the funds they raise, help her get it fixed or whatever. It's support for the families of our service members.
That's kind of fantastic. And I say this because a lot of military are younger people, and say some guy, 18, marries his childhood wife with 16, 17. She's not prepared for that. He goes over to war. She is the one who's the hero. She's the one's paying the bill. She's the one fixing the car, fixing the plumbing, as you say. She's not prepared for that. We can't expect any young girls just to get out and do all this. So the fact we have some type of a assist program, I think, is absolutely fantastic. Jesse, George, why don't you put it on hold a sec? We just found John Del Santo back again. John, welcome back, brother.
Thank you. How are you doing?
Hey, you guys, I'm gonna sign off.
Say goodbye, Jesse.
I am. I'm gonna do the family thing, actually. So I'm gonna keep listening, but I'm gonna sign off.
All right. I'll see you tomorrow, right, Jesse.
Yes, you will. See you in the morning.
All right. John, you're on the floor, please.
Okay.
All right,
you asked me to give you a call and let you know what was going down in this neck of the woods with the bait. We've got a damn email just came on. First thing is, we've got an abate sponsored bill, AB 695, authored by Assemblyman Chris Minorby, to repeal the mandatory motorcycle helmet law. It's set for its first hearing in the Assembly Transportation Committee on April 25, at 1:30, and that is a helmet law repeal bill. I've got the particulars, you know, if anybody wants them, but I won't bore you with them. Our other bill...
Whoever wants them, can you send something to Screwdriver, John?
Yeah, sure, I can do that. Okay. Our other bill, AB 1047, is to stop motorcycle-only checkpoints. Set to be heard in April also in the Assembly Transportation Committee. The bill will prohibit the California Office of Traffic Safety from issuing grants to law enforcement agencies who will stage motorcycle-only checkpoints. Now, OTS says they already do that. OTS says when they give money to a... See, their money comes from NHTSA. NHTSA to OTS. OTS gives it to the cops. And they tell them that's not supposed to be motorcycle-only, okay? It's supposed to be, you know, anybody who is breaking the law doing something that would endanger a motorcycle. Okay, now theoretically, according like to what Mark Temple says, if only 2% of the vehicles on the road are motorcycles, well then only 2% of the tickets issued should be two motorcycles. Now that's exactly opposite of what happens out there. Now the part of this bill that makes it good is that it's going to require the OTS to conduct audits of the safety checkpoints to make sure that law enforcement people are doing what they're supposed to be doing. And then we've got the Freedom and Motorcycle Rally at the state capitol on May 23rd, where we meet on the Capitol steps and go in to visit our legislators. It's going to be on the South Capitol steps from 11 o'clock to 1 o'clock. And as we have done in the past, Abate has sponsored free motorcycle parking on the north side of N Street between 10th and 14th from like 8 a.m. to 6 p.m. And that's what I got. And like I say, for the particulars, I'll email them to Screwdriver.
Well, hang on for a second, John. While the Charlton Heston was speaking, you made kind of an offer to everybody. Would you like to repeat that offer, please?
Yeah, sure.
If they don't have a copy?
Yeah, the Constitution is like... You know, it's our basic. It's what we do, and I'm glad Charlton Heston likes that one amendment. But we need to like all of them. You know, if anybody can't get a constitution or wants a constitution, give your name and address to Philip, to Screwdriver, and he'll give it to me. It costs me $1, but I'll mail it to you. I'll mail you a constitution. We give these out free to our members at the meetings. So, it's something like you should know. You know, Second Amendment, Fourth Amendment, you name it, you should know it. Otherwise, if you don't know what your rights are, then you don't have any. Okay.
John, I have to ask you one more thing before George jumps in. John, I have the event coming up for the Paralyzed Vets, as we know. You and your wife were nice enough to make a donation. Would you kind of describe that so everybody can hear it today? This is from John and Fran Del Santo, San Diego. Can you describe that picture, please?
Oh, yeah. Okay, it was this really neat picture that Fran got. The traveling wall was in town here, and Fran went over to look at it, and there's a little girl looking up a name. And in the back, to the right of her, there were some soldiers standing. And so that, the picture was the little girl looking at the wall and the image of soldiers behind her. It was such a dynamite picture, really. You know, and you know, when you look at it, you think, well, that must be staged. And it wasn't. It was just like, it was right there. It happened right there. And Bill is auctioning that off for the PVA, Paralyzed Vets Association.
And I want to thank in advance now. Any chance you're going to make it up on Friday, or Saturday or Sunday, John, Fran?
Saturday or Sunday?
Well, Sunday I got the blessing of the bikes I do every year, you know, blah, blah, blah. And then on Saturday...
Okay, Fran might. I'm not traveling well right at the moment.
No, that's what I was asking you, brother. Well, if you don't make it now, that's the reason I'm bringing this up. I know you're a shy person, but... If you don't make it, I want people to understand that we thank you for this piece of history, and that's exactly what it is. It's something, as you just said, you had to just catch it. You couldn't stage it. It wouldn't have the same effect at all.
Really, really. It's such a neat picture.
George, you still on the phone?
Still here.
You want to comment? You want to talk to John a little about anything?
Well, John, I never met John before. Just heard him this evening. And what you're saying is very exciting to me because many, many years ago, if you were in California, you would remember it. We had this same contest with the state about the helmet law. And I know for a fact that one of the things that was happening was that the officers were putting down, in every just about every accident involving a motorcycle, they were putting down head injuries. Well, I know for a fact, and so do many others, that the motorcycle helmet does not protect your head except from low-speed accidents. If you're going fairly fast, 25 or 30 miles an hour, all it'll do is manage to snap your neck because it's heavy. So telling us that if you wear that one of those, it's going to save your life is not true.
No, in fact, it's not.
I saw an accident report where a guy hit a guardrail and went through his chest, and they said death by head injury. And I said, well, it would be a little difficult to live with a 10-inch guardrail through your chest, no matter what happened to your head. So we're a state that has an awful lot of motorcyclists, and the most important thing for motorcycles.
So, do you know that we have 2.3 million registered motorcycles in California?
I didn't know that, but glad to hear it, because to me the most important thing for motorcycle safety is training. If you
yeah, I believe
people,
I'm with you on that. I mean, I am a driving instructor, not of motorcycles, but of anything else with wheels on it. And I just believe in training. It's NHTSA has just put in a thing for the coming year for money that they want, and they've asked Congress for $7 million to try to force DOT compliant helmets onto people. So that's Motorcycle Riders Foundation is fighting that now. But that's a,
I think they ought to take that $7 million and certify a DOT helmet, then I can go buy one.
Yeah, right, right. I mean, the DOT does not certify helmets. George, what state are you from?
California.
Oh, which part?
I was born in Eureka.
Yeah, where are you at now?
I'm in Oceanside, California, the most wonderful place on earth to live.
You are, other than in Oceanside, it would be almost impossible to get a helmet ticket in the South Pole of California. We've had lawsuits here. We sued the CHP. And if Oceanside PD was supposed to be doing what they're doing following the CHP regs, you wouldn't get any tickets in Oceanside either, but you and I both know that that's not true.
Well, John, you know they've actually unless you're giving them a hard time, and I can testify to this as well as with Bill. I spent in November. I spent an hour and 15 minutes in a courtroom with seven officers to my right who came unprepared. So the judge asked me if there was anything else I needed before he dismissed the case, and I said yes. I'd like a writ of habeas corpus to get all my stuff back that these guys confiscated. It was given to me, and I can't get a helmet ticket in Oceanside now. And anybody that knows me up here that I've trained can't get one either. The last ticket that was given out by a person here that we know gave it for a guy who started his bike the day after Thanksgiving. It was a Friday night, 30 degrees out. He started the bike. He let it warm up for 3 minutes. He walked 5 feet from the bike and got a ticket for leaving his vehicle unattended, which last week Wednesday on the 30th, we won. Because she came the cop that did it came unprepared, couldn't answer the questions, lied. It's on tape that she lied in the courtroom. We bought the CD. She just tap danced the whole thing, and the judge or the commissioner who happened to be a rider agreed that, yes, most people do start their bike, and they don't sit on it when it warms up. But she gave him a ticket for walking 5 feet from his bike, 2.5 miles away from where it was, and said it was a safety violation. So the judge said,
anybody who's riding around this lower Southern California area. They're going to be doing motorcycle checks on Ortega Highway for the next month or so. So watch yourself on Ortega Highway.
Well, tomorrow night they start doing them in Hemet.
Yeah, no, I sent that copy, the thing that you saw about
right.
Hemet, where it says they're going to do motorcycle-only checkpoints. I sent that copy up to the guy that I deal with the Office of Traffic Safety, and he's going to check into that. He says it's not supposed to be motorcycle-only checkpoints. And so the OTS has that, and he's going to follow.
Well, since Hemet had all that trouble with motorcycles that they blamed, which couldn't be proven yet, that's why they're doing it. They're pegging there because that's how they got the money. I understand that's how they got the money to do that.
Through the OTS, it's supposed to be for safety checks, not motorcycle-only safety checks. So anytime I see a safety check and they say anything about motorcycle this, motorcycle that, I send it up to this guy, and he'll check it out because they don't want to get the rep. You know, if there's a funding motorcycle-only stuff, it's against the law. And then there's a new law coming in that it was put in Washington by Sensenbrenner, who also said that federal money should not go to fund motorcycle-only checkpoints. So, you know, it's not constitutional. It's just like, okay, we're going to go on, we're going to have a checkpoint, and we're going to check all brown guys. You know, it's fucking against the law, I'm sorry. And it's if they're only checking motorcycle, it's against the law, too. Am I allowed to say that on the radio?
You are, sir.
You can say anything you want here, brother.
This is the last bastion of freedom in America. You can say anything you want. We're just happy you're able to speak. We're not here to chastise you, to tell you what to do at all. This is America. Please go ahead. Now, you know, this is what you have to say is always so important. And every time I do an event, I've said this in the past, I would love to get an abate booth, abate card table, something down there, because we need, I believe, at a big events, we need our political arm of the motorcycle world, which to me is abate. And also, and I mentioned this, Screwdriver, you're always out there walking around with the Bolt logo on and talking about Bolt's rights. Although you're mostly a one-man team here in North County, per se, you're doing the work of many. But John, over and over, anybody that's in possibly from a bait that would love to come down, try to see if you can squeeze somebody for any event at Kennedy's, John.
Let me go follow through on that and see what I can do.
I think that message is so important with that. Now, see, you're talking about, our political rights, and here we've got George over here, and he's with the American Legion Riders, and he's out here helping all those. Well, they do so much, but they're also with the Patriot Guards. John, you're a Patriot Guard, aren't you?
I'm a Patriot Guard, and I'm also an American Legion rider at a post 460.
No, George, you know where 460 is, post?
Yes, I do.
Oh, well, shoot, I didn't know you guys were already blood brothers and all that. Okay.
I haven't been there, but I see them all the time, so. We just got through riding over to 435 this last weekend to their new post, and it was we had a great experience there.
Now, where's 43?
John, I went down to Del Zora.
That's in Vista.
Your place, Vista, I'm sorry. But I rode down to Del Zora, John, and I was at a diabetes run a couple weeks ago. All kind of American Legion riders from that area showed up. I think it was 255. Does that sound like something in San Diego?
Right, yes.
Okay, very nice guys, very nice. They showed up in support, too, so it was kind of nice. I hope I can challenge the other American Legion riders to show up.
Yeah, 460 started a branch back about 2 months ago, and they were looking for people to kind of fill out the roles, so Fran and I joined there. We were already members of the post, so we just had to join the American
right.
Legion Riders.
Well, I don't know how many of you managed to be there because I didn't know everybody, but there were 12 of us from Post 146 that went to the American, the Vietnam Veterans Welcome Home Day wasn't on the same day over at 435 here about a week ago. And their post commander got up and welcomed us home. And we had one of our members, who is a active duty Navy chief, and she's a woman, got up and sang the Star-Spangled Banner, and incidentally sang it as well as I've ever heard it sung.
Wow.
And he welcomed us home. He then bought us all a beer and fed us a steak dinner to show their appreciation.
Wow.
For us returning Vietnam vets. And I said, you know, I told him, I said, look, I said, I'm sure there are many people feeling the same that I am. I said, I came back from Vietnam in 66, and the reception that I received was less than cordial. And here it is, almost 50 years later, and I'm finally beginning to feel in my heart like somebody cared. I said, so thank you for that, because really hadn't come about. So whenever we do a ride welcoming home these young Marines, or if we do a memorial ride where we take, you know, we're losing a lot of World War II vets now, and we try to be the guard for the ceremonies. We ride, you know, we try to get as many bikes as we can. PGR and American Legion riders get together, and we ride to the different memorial cemeteries to pay our respects to these fallen heroes. And I think that we're making a difference. I certainly know that those of us who participate feel the difference. And that's what's important in the country and in the world, is that you feel that you're important, you're respected, and you're making a difference. And we're trying to do that. And that's one of the reasons I'm an avid recruiter for the American Legion Riders. And we'll continue to do that.
John, George, can I put you on hold a second? We have Sam from Las Vegas trying to call and join the conversation.
Okay.
Caller from Vegas, are you out there?
Tiger Lily. Hi, it's Tiger Lily. How are you?
Hi, Tiger Lily. We got John and George. George is with the American Legion Riders, and John, of course, is the famous John Del Santo Abate.
Oh, okay. What part of Abate? What part of California?
San Diego. Down
in
Local 6.
Oh, okay, the San Diego thing. What is going on down there with the helmet law in California?
Okay, we've got, I'll give you a quickie here because I already told it to the folks on the radio.
Sorry.
95 is going to have its first hearing on April 25th at 1:30, and that's if you have meet certain requirements, if you're 18 years of age or older, and you've completed a motorcycle safety training program, or if you've been riding for more than 2 years, licensed for more than 2 years, then you don't have to wear the hat no more.
Okay. That's I don't know if it's better or more restrictive than ours. I think ours is more restrictive. Here in Nevada, the bill is SB 177, and it is, you have to be at least 21, and you have to have had an approved motorcycle course, and you have to have, not or, and you have to have had a year's experience. So, but the in past legislative hearings, what they did is they would block it, or it came to an end because Ken Kiphart, the guy who runs the motorcycle safety course, he's the program administrator. He would lobby against the bill. He'd say he was neutral, but then he'd say, "Oh, our department, we cannot handle the number of riders that are going to want to go through our program." So he would nix it. He would influence the legislators to get rid of it. But so this year, the senator that introduced it, Senator Gustafson, he proposed to make it to grandfather in everybody who's already got a motorcycle endorsement, doesn't need to go through any training. If you've got a license, you're good to ride without a helmet. So that was a good thing, except that our legislation went through on March the 10th. Now, the Senate for the Transportation Committee hearing, her name is Shirley Breeden, and she engaged the motorcycle riding community to help her get elected. And she's the chair of the transportation, and she heard it, and it was overwhelmingly supportive. I mean, the only people that were objecting were paid lobbyists. And one thing that I didn't realize is one of the persons that objected is a police officer who is actually on taxpayer dime, and he is a paid lobbyist to oppose this bill. So I couldn't believe all of the opposition, and everybody who opposed was a lobbyist and a paid lobbyist. So the other two people who opposed was Ken Kiphart, again, the program administrator. He said, you know, well, if you grandfather it in, then it should be okay. And then we had a couple of other people who said, you know, we do private training, and we have more than enough classroom space. And then the third person that objected, oh, my God, he is on my hit list because his name is John Johansson, and he testified that it costs so much more money to trauma patients are so much more expensive if they don't wear a helmet than if they do. When he just quoted the hundreds of thousands of dollars.
I'm sorry, you said his name was what?
John Johansson. He works for Nevada DPS OTS.
Okay.
Yes, he's a civil servant. He was not a paid lobbyist or an unpaid lobbyist. He went there supposedly to give numbers to the legislators. And what he testified, I asked him if he would give me the data that he used to testify, and I know he did not intend to give me everything that he gave me, because it was very clear. The graphs that they made, first of all, I got the information from the University of Nevada School of Medicine. And I saw the little dialogue exchange between the School of Medicine and this bozo. And basically the School of Medicine said, I don't understand, you know, it just seems weird that you would think that if you don't wear a helmet, it's going to be a whole lot more expensive than if you do. But, you know, maybe it's because the ones that don't wear a helmet die, and then that doesn't cost, that's not going to be, right.
Yeah,
so,
are you familiar with David Stilwell in Nevada?
Oh, yes, he's my best friend. I speak to him more than I speak to my husband, and my husband's retired.
He's a damn good person to hook up with.
Oh, heck yeah. I know everything I am and everything I do, I credit Dave Stilwell. He's just pointed me in the right direction for everything that I know. And when I examined the data that he had, this John Johansson, in Arizona, which is a pretty helmet true state, you know, helmet choice state, the actual figures, it showed that if you wear a helmet, the trauma patient care will cost you $47,000 more than if you don't wear a helmet. Absolutely, I got that. I'll shoot that out to you, California boys, because you need to know the big fat lies that they're doing. And that's what's kept us from 40 years in Nevada, for God's sakes. And
a copy of that. Is there any way you can send a copy to Hannigan?
Yes, I will go on ahead and Philip, if you wouldn't mind hooking me up with his email address, I will go on ahead and forward that information. And I've exposed him to all of the senators and everybody I could think of, and this bitch who chaired the meeting, who was supposed to be our friend, she thought, oh, it's never going to go anywhere because it never does, so, you know, let me just kiss their asses and they'll go away. Well, no, we did our homework, we got our ducks in a row, and even the newspaper, the Las Vegas Review Journal, they were optimistic that this year it could possibly pass, and that bitch is holding it on her desk. It's been there since March the 10th. So I'm trying to stir up.
There's a Nevada guy named, Brenner, I think, and he's just sitting on the bill. There was a petition on our email today saying, you know, send us blog and tell us that.
It's Senator Breeden, but it's a female. It's Shirley Breeden. Yes.
Oh, okay.
Shirley Breeden, and she's a woman, and a lot of people didn't know that. It's just they know it's Senator Breeden, so that they assume it's a man. But no, she's a woman, And when we all testified, I had a few notes I was going to testify on behalf of myself because, you know, I'm a writer for Quick Throttle magazine, but I didn't want to – the magazine doesn't want to take a position, and I understand that. So I want to take a position as myself, as somebody who has interfaced with the motorcycling community and everything. So when I testified, I talked about the 56 helmet tickets that were dismissed in Henderson, Nevada, because the law is unenforceable. And I talked about how law enforcers are using the helmet law as a means to detain, to profile and detain motorcyclists, and then get them for everything that they can get them. And when I talked to Senator Breeden about a week ago to ask her, hey, what's the holdup on this bill? You know, you've had it on your desk a few weeks now. She, you know, we talked about it, and I said, you know, if you pass this, I promise you, our economy will just skyrocket, especially as far as the tourism, because our state depends on tourism. That's our bread and butter, and because the Arizonans would come because they don't want to hassle with a helmet, and some of them will wear a novelty helmet. And here in Nevada, it's very well known that these law enforcers are very, very aggressive. So do you know what this senator said to me? She said, well, you know, we'll have to agree to disagree because I've ridden on the back of my boyfriend's motorcycle all throughout Nevada, and I have never seen a police officer be mean to anybody or even give anybody a ticket. And I'm thinking, bitch, you are so out of touch. So out of touch.
And, good for you.
Oh, I didn't tell her that, but I've been putting the heat on, and I think I've been sending you blind copies, Philip, because you're on the boat list. And
okay,
I got
a scoot. I'll talk to you later.
Okay, good. So,
Tanya Lily, I had a question for you. The Quick Throttle's got a big anniversary coming up, doesn't it? Soon?
Yes, I think so. I think either this month or, gosh, I don't know, like the 10-year or something.
Right. Are you coming over to California for that anniversary party?
Oh, yeah. Well, you know, I was looking at the date, and I think it conflicts with something, and I don't remember what, but I just kind of tossed it away and thought, well, no, I can't make it because I don't know what it conflicts with. I'm getting ready to be a grandmother, and so it may conflict with my daughter's due date. I'm not sure.
I just wonder if you were. I'd like to – this is good, Bill Kennedy. I'd like to drive up, meet you there, but I'll catch you on Las Vegas runs. I'm not going to be at Laughlin, but I'll definitely be at the Vegas party. We'll get a chance to sit and talk then also.
That would be so wonderful. And, you know, you guys keep talking about Vista and Oceanside. I used to live – I was a Marine in Camp Pendleton for 4 years, 79 to 83. And so I lived in Vista. I lived on Dorsey Way in Vista and in Oceanside for a little while as well. So you guys, every time you talk about these places, it just brings back some really warm memories. And the weather out there is so spectacular.
It is absolutely fantastic.
Yeah, so anything I can see. Pardon me, go ahead.
Did you were talking earlier about Charlton Heston talking about the Constitution. Did you pick any of that up at all? Or did you dial in late?
Me?
Tiger Lily?
Oh, no, I didn't. I didn't hear about what you were talking about as far as the Constitution.
Okay. Well, let's get George. We kind of left George. George, you still with us, brother?
I'm still here.
Okay, George with American Legion Riders, and this is Tiger Lily from Nevada. You see, she's quite opinionated. She's out here for.
She happens to have an article in this month.
Oh, wait a minute. We're giving her a plug here. Hang on.
She also happens to have an article on page 55 of this month's Quick Throttle.
George, did you pick the Quick Throttle at my shop up?
No, I don't.
Oh, well, next time you come in, we'll give it to you. She's got a nice, interesting article, Nevada's Helmet Choice Bill SB-177, Lessons from Reverend Martin Luther King, Jr. Interesting. So I guess next time you stop by the shop, I'll give you one of those, George.
You know, the
interesting
thing,
George, with the American Legion Riders, the Patriot Guard. You've got that in Arizona, don't you?
In Arizona?
Yes.
Or Nevada?
Nevada. I'm sorry.
Yeah. One of our American Legion people that's really big in the American Legion is Vic Doc Moss. I don't know if you guys are familiar with him. He's doing the Breezy Rider. I think it's next week, and it's for the Wounded Warriors. And what they do is they go to in the middle of the brothels. I covered that story last year, and they go to where the brothels are, and they just take a nice ride completely naked for about a quarter of a mile. And so completely naked. I mean, and so they were trying to get me to take my clothes off, and I said, let me tell you something. If I drop my drawers, my hemorrhoid will fall, and I might run myself over. And there's a lot of ways I wouldn't mind dying, but, you know, bleeding out of the butt is not one way.
George,
I'm not
going to
touch it.
How come your guys don't have rides like that?
We're a little more what you might call sedate.
Conservative.
You know, the American Legion Riders is not an MC.
Uh-huh.
It's a writers group. And I like to say to people all the time that we're a law-obeying writers group. We obey the law. We ride together because we love motorcycles, and we love doing what we do for the armed forces, servicemen that are serving today. And we're going to continue to do that. I believe that with the message that we have for the community, we're going to grow rapidly. I know that we are right now, and I see that happening more and more in the future. As you know, Bill, I used to be in the motorcycle business in the Bay Area, and I can tell you this, that when you're talking about a dealer or a motorcycle shop putting on a maintenance training program, we used to do that once a month, and it was unbelievably well attended. And I will say this, in my years in the motorcycle industry, I can tell you unequivocally that motorcycles are safer than cars. In fact, if you wanted to look at a safety stop, you would find a lot more safety violations in your automobile than you'll find in the motorcycle, because we take better care of the motorcycle.
We have more to lose by not taking care of it.
Absolutely.
Mm-hmm.
George, have you ever been pulled over by a policeman who didn't know who you were and questioned you? I was curious, since you've been around here in North County?
Not in North County. Most of the
somewhere
police
else, maybe?
In North County know me. Because I was very active in the Oceanside PD's fundraisers in the Gulf area, and I was one of the, my wife and I were quite active in that, so we're pretty well known.
Well, welcome to my world. I'm pretty well known here too.
Everybody knows you.
When I was in the Marine Corps, there was I used to go to that college. There was a college out there in Oceanside, like a
Miracosta.
Miracosta College, yes, I did about a couple of years of college there, and I met the, at the time, and it was must have been 1980, it was the chief of police there at the in Oceanside, the Oceanside chief of police, really nice gentleman, and he hooked me up with a ride-along, because, you know, I was getting ready to leave the Marine Corps in another year, and he said, you should become a cop, and so I thought about it, and I went riding along with him, and he was just the nicest little guy, and it was such an eye-opening experience. It was fun, and I got to see he arrested a transvestite, and he went on a chase, and I got to see somebody dead on a crash, and it's like, wow, this was really, really exciting. But then I thought, well, you know, the LAPD makes more money. So then I went to take their test, and the only thing that I couldn't pass, I couldn't jump over their 8-foot fence that they had. Otherwise, who knows? My whole life might have taken a completely different direction. I might have been a cop.
Well, I get a lot of ride along offers.
One way. You two guys, I did a ride along back in college, and we were at a domestic violence, and the husband and wife, they were just pounding and screaming and yelling, and the two police are trying to be very polite. Finally, I stepped up in front of the cops, knocked on the door, and said, hello, this is Bill Kennedy, I want you to open the door, I want you to come out, I want you to talk to me right now. And the cop said, Mr. Kennedy, you're the only one here without a gun. Why are you in front? And I went, oh yeah, I'll get back again. I thought it was taking too damn long to talk to these people. But when they remind me I didn't have a gun, I step back, let the cops do their job.
You know, it's interesting you talk about that stuff. Many years ago, up in Northern California, I got a ticket for no helmet. And this was when they were really giving us a hard time. And a bunch of us did an organized ride. And I'm not going to name the city, but we went to this city that was giving us a hard time. And we rode there on purpose without helmets. And I got a ticket, of course. And to just give you an idea, my little brother is one of the foremost criminal attorneys in Northern California. And obviously, it wouldn't happen on a normal deal, but he wrote about a 150-page brief on the legality of that particular law. And when I went to court, the judge threw the thing out. The other guys, without that particular approach, had to pay a ticket. So it's not like it's a done deal. You know, if you got the right representation.
Do you still have a copy of that? Do you still have a copy of that? Do you still have a copy of that?
I don't have a copy of it. I'd
like to read that.
I don't know if my brother still has it or not. But I could find
out. Yeah, if you could find out, I'd like to read that. Maybe I grab everything I can to read about stuff like that.
Okay, and who's this?
Philip.
Oh, hey, okay, Philip. Philip, I'll ask my brother if he's still got it. He probably does. He keeps everything.
He's got that. We'll kick that down to John Del Santo, too, because that's something like John Del Santo, the bait guy, very much like that, I'm sure.
Yeah.
He feeds me. John feeds me all that stuff, as well as being involved with Tiger Lily and everybody else in Bull.
Yeah, Tiger, you got to let us know when you're coming into Southern California, because we like to hook up and say hello to you face-to-face. And if not, then... with Screwdriver and I are in Vegas, we hopefully can tie up there. Do you make Vegas yearly?
She lives in Vegas.
Well, just because some people leave town. No. The damn run's a pain in the ass.
When is the thing in Vegas?
Gosh, I think it's the end of April. There's going to be in Laughlin is going to be the big deal. And Las Vegas Bike Fest is in October, the end of September.
What's that thing you might have going in July?
Well, I don't know anything in July. My God, it's going to be so hot. I know there's something in August that's going to happen. There's a great big motorcycle safety type of a thing, and this lady is organizing it, and she's anticipating 30,000 motorcyclists from all over. And I said, in August? Oh, my. She said she's got the Speedway. Rented out and everything, so I don't know what that. I don't know a whole lot about that, but she asked me to be a guest speaker during that time, and I'm thinking, oh my God, I don't really know if, you know, what the situation is. But we had a nice little talk with her, David Stillwell and I, to just teach her her rights and to, you know, to tell her this is the kind of stuff that we would want to share with the motorcyclists, just basic, very nuts and bolts. If a police officer comes up to you and asks you, may I see your ID? Is that an encounter or a detainment? And how to worm your way out of getting arrested? Because if a police officer is asking you questions, they obviously don't have enough information to arrest you, or they would have already arrested you. The only reason they're engaging you is to get the information and the probable cause that they need in order to arrest you. So that's why it's so important to plead the fifth. And also, a lot of people argue that, you know, well, if I have nothing to hide, you know, so you know, I don't mind saying whatever needs to be said, or you search me, you can do anything you want to. And Dave turned that around very beautifully the other day. He told an owner of a motorcycle shop, because what they're doing is they're raiding motorcycle shops now here in Las Vegas. And he said, you know, if a cop says to you, what, do you have something to hide? Then your response should be, do you have something to find? So he's really good about just twisting it and just kind of turning it around.
Tiger Lily and George, I have to break that. We only get about 90 seconds left.
Okay.
If you want to wrap something up, down to 60 seconds now. I'm very pleased both you guys came on tonight, because none of our Europeans checked in. None of our East Coast folks checked in. George, we really want to thank you for spending so much time sharing about the American Legion Rise.
Yes.
We hope you'll be an irregular regular. That means you call in whenever the hell you feel like it. Tiger Lily, I thank you very much for the work you're doing in Nevada.
not Arizona.
Thanks. Nice to meet you, George.
I think we're going to have a good friendship. I like the way you think, little girl.
And if you guys aren't busy Tuesday, we do this again on Tuesday as well as Thursdays.
Okay.
All right. Have a great one, you guys.
All right. Thanks for calling.
Thank you, everybody,
all right.
To all
uh-huh.
the friends out there listening, all that. Good night, everybody. Remember, stand up for your rights.
Okay.
Good night, guys.
Good night, Bill.
Good night.